In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Wednesday, June 19th, 2013 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. It's Pentagon Solutions today in the 3 o'clock hour. I am pleased to welcome back to the program the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment, Catherine Hammack. It is great to see you as always, ma'am. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Francis. Always delighted to join you.
I always enjoy hearing from you when you come in what your travel itinerary has been recently, because in your role, it's your responsibility, obviously, to go and see these installations firsthand. So tell me some of the places you've been since the last time you've been on the program. It's been about 2 or 3 months.
It has. And, you know, one of the things we're working on is over in Europe, because we are reducing the number of brigade combat teams we have there. And so we're withdrawing 2 brigade combat teams out of the 4 stationed there. And this is part of a plan that we have been working on. So if you look at between 2006 and 2016, our force structure, or the number of soldiers we have in Europe, is shrinking by 45%. And so, appropriately, as you would think, we are reducing our infrastructure. And our infrastructure are the barracks, the offices, the motor pools, and all those facilities that support our soldiers and their families. So we're reducing our infrastructure by 50%, our civilian staffing by 58%, and our base operating costs are being reduced by 57%. So this shows you what a focused, coordinated effort can do to align our costs and our infrastructure with our force.
Tell me about the decision-making process that you go through in coming to all those numbers. I'm sure that the idea wasn't to come to those numbers per se. So tell me, when you understand that you're cutting your force structure 45%, how you go about structuring the rest of those cuts and deciding where they're going to come.
Well, this is really a total Army analysis, taking a look at our force structure overall. And, you know, the Berlin Wall came down, and we have decided as a nation we don't need as many forces in Europe, because that's not where the threat is. Yet we need to keep some forces over there because we train with our allies. And that's what an amazing thing. Every time I go into Afghanistan, we're fighting side by side with our allies. And every time we train allies and they go in and fight with us as coalition partners, that's one or more less soldiers from the U.S. Army that has to deploy. And so the way we're fighting in Afghanistan is really interesting to me, in that we're fighting side by side. In Europe, we have the ability to train side by side. So we understand each other when we go into a threat environment. We're not learning in a threat environment. We learn in a safe environment. So we need some forces stationed in Europe so that we can do that training that is so critical to keeping down the threats around this world. And so as we reduced our force structure, we looked at where we had infrastructure. And we might have a high-cost small base that we can consolidate those operations onto a lower-cost large base. And we looked at everything. We sort of ranked and rated it. We looked at the value, sort of a ranking and rating analysis, a military value analysis, military value criteria, to determine what it offers to us. What is interesting is we're reducing our acreage only by 29%. So what we're keeping is some of the larger training bases, because we're over there so we can train with our allies. But some of the smaller, more urban bases that might be a warehouse or two, they might be offices or other infrastructure, that's what we're collapsing into those bases we're deciding to keep.
What are the workforce implications for that 58%, I believe you said, was the civilian staff that you're shrinking by? How will that happen, and what's your time frame for that happening?
This has been a long plan, because what's interesting about our relationship and our labor agreements in Europe, it requires notification. And the notification is over 300 days. So we notify that our intention is to collapse the space and there will be a reduction in manpower. Some of that manpower is U.S.-based. Some of it is local workforce that might provide housekeeping, cleaning, maintenance, operations. So after the notification period, then we are able to consolidate the base, and we do it in very close working relationship with the German government.
Now, you have been very clear in your support of the president's request for another round of BRAC, at least one, in the 2015 budget request, and moving forward, 14, excuse me, but for action in 2015. What can you take, do you think, from the effort that you're conducting in Europe to Congress to say, this is good, this is not harmful, this is going to benefit the Army and the men and women that serve in it, both on the civilian side and the uniform side, in the years to come, by doing this? Because, as you well know, we've covered the tremendous amount of resistance that you're up against right now.
Absolutely. And one of the things that Congress has asked the Office of the Secretary of Defense to look at is, have we done enough? Is there anything we haven't considered? And take a look at the jointness. Are the services working together? And our plan is, every time we determine, as the Army, that we don't need a location, we consult with the other services. You know, we don't need it. Hey, Air Force, Navy, do you need it? And if there isn't an airfield or it's not at a location that can accept a amphibious fleet, quite often the Air Force and Navy don't need it. But we do that look at it. And OSD is coming in to see, to validate what we're doing, to see if there's more opportunities for consolidation and jointness. And then that's going in a report to Congress that we hope to get out later this year.
Are those numbers, though, that you cited at the beginning, you think potentially your greatest selling point? Because those, in a tightening environment, those are pretty compelling numbers.
Absolutely. And we are doing it at no cost to the taxpayer. And that can be a little difficult to explain, because when we are consolidating facilities, you'd think that you might have to build something to accept the consolidation. What we are doing is, as we are collapsing a base, we are working with the German government to determine the value of the vertical infrastructure. German government owns the land. We don't own the land. But they reimburse us for the vertical infrastructure that we have added to it. And out of that reimbursement account, that facilitates the move. In the United States, quite often the transfer of land is a little more distant from our movement, because you can't really transfer the land until you've moved off your operations. But that is exactly what we want to convey to Congress, Francis, just what you said, that we can do this in an economical manner that doesn't incur a lot of extra costs. And remember, this is different from BRAC 2005. BRAC 2005 was bringing units from overseas back to the United States, which meant we had to build up in the United States. We pulled units out of Europe, and we had to build up a place for them to live and work in the United States. We pulled units out of Korea. We had to build up a place for them to live and work in the United States. This next round of BRAC is going to be all about consolidation, not about building up.
Now, you mentioned some of the logistics challenges to other services being able to use your facilities. In addition to that, they're in shrink mode, too. And so it strikes me that if Congress wants you to push in that direction, the likelihood that that's going to work when the Navy and the Air Force are also getting smaller, although not to the degree that the Army is probably not really high. Is that fair to say?
I would agree with you. And one of the great things I'm seeing when I go over there is the creative uses that the German government's putting it to. Because if you think of an Army base, there are dormitories or lodging, there are training classrooms, and there's office spaces. Now think of what a university is. That's dormitories for students, that's classrooms for education, and that's offices for the instructors. So some of these older bases that have great and wonderful historic buildings on it, they're converting to colleges. That benefits the community.
Now, the folks in my profession look at the policy level on this and the interaction between the United States government and the governments of the countries throughout Europe and see some uneasiness, some apprehension about this strategy shift. Is any of that showing up in the logistics interaction that you're having with the German government as far as doing what you need to do here?
I think those are always discussions that occur between different foreign governments, but the world right now is all facing challenges having to do with the economic climate. And we are not the only country that's looking at our military services to determine what the optimal size, shape, and location is. So I think there's a recognition that as we try and stabilize the world, and as we try and decrease the amount of conflicts, when you're at peace, maybe you don't need as much as you would when you're at war. It's always fascinating to me to take a look at history. And you look at history, and in World War II, we were an army of 8 million soldiers. So we had the infrastructure to train, house, educate 8 million soldiers. And some of that infrastructure still existing today in the United States. We're an army of 560 going down to 490 or perhaps even lower. We have excess infrastructure still in the United States.
We're going to talk more about that when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest is Catherine Hammack, Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. And we'll continue on Pentagon Solutions in a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Welcome to the NGA.net Federal Talent Management Report. I'm Shauna Stewart with the NGA.net Customer Experience Team and formerly with OPM. Federal Times recently reported over 10,000 federal employees submitted retirement claims in March, bringing the first quarter total to over 52,000 employees, almost 51% more than in quarter one of 2012. Check out NGA.net's cloud-based talent management solutions to see how NGA.net can help your agency stay ahead of these trends. NGA.net. Performance you can count on.
You are elite. You hold a high-level security clearance and have the skills and experience everyone wants. So what do you want? To develop cutting-edge software? Architect next-gen cyber defense systems? Then what you want is what L3 wants. Growth. Results. Get what you want. If you hold a top-secret SCI with Polygraph, join L3 June 26th from 1 to 7 p.m. at the Reston Town Center. Visit L3Stratus.com for more information. It takes a mission-focused mind to be L3.
At BAE Systems, we work relentlessly to stay ahead of the bad guys. One significant challenge every organization faces is cyber threats. That's why our experts leverage the world's most advanced cyber operations technologies, enabling us to preempt network breaches in minutes, not days. Knowing our work makes a difference inspires us every day. We're there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at baesystems.com/nextfront.
Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, sponsored by AT&T, every Tuesday morning at 11 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk has the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Check out the world of high technology in the federal government as John speaks to CISOs, CTOs, and CIOs and gets into the specifics for federal IT systems integrators. Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, sponsored by AT&T, Tuesday mornings at 11 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Previously on Veterans in the Private Sector, Making the Transition. Dan Doherty, Vice President of the Federal Division at EMC, discusses the qualities and skills that veterans bring and could bring to the private sector.
It's an honor to work with the veterans on our team. We have a tremendous amount of veterans in our organization. Some of our best employees are really the servicemen and women that we've hired. They have great leadership skills. They take initiative. They take responsibility. They're accountable. They're creative. You know, those are exactly the things that every company is looking for when they hire great people. 500,000 1,000 servicemen and women coming out of the service over the next 5 years. And the reason we wanted to have this discussion today is because we believe that every single one of them is going to be having the same thoughts as they enter, as they leave the service. So number one, you're not alone. We at EMC believe that our veterans are probably the best employees we have today.
At EMC, hiring veterans is one of their top priorities. EMC is a leader at providing cloud solutions and information technology to the federal government. To listen to this discussion in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword veterans.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Thursday's Federal Drive. It's one thing to index or image your agency's historic records, but we'll have advice on how you digitize ancient documents so they're searchable. Plus cloud computing, data center consolidation, big data, cybersecurity. How do agencies make sense of it all? We've got a few ideas for an integrated approach. Those stories and much more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My guest for Pentagon Solutions today, Catherine Hammack, the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. And we talked about infrastructure costs and your goal to reduce those costs and what, some of the things that you've done in Europe already to do that. One of the cost areas that we're starting to hear a lot more about when it comes to sequestration in particular, but budget pressures in general, is readiness and how readiness is being impacted here. You've drawn recently a pretty close correlation between these two things. Talk about that some, please.
Absolutely. Well, one of the challenges with sequestration or the Budget Control Act is it's reduced our funding. And so we are focusing funding on the fight, on the warfighter. And that's where we need to be. But in doing so, there's less money available to operate our bases and to operate our infrastructure. So as we draw down the force, we need to draw down our infrastructure. And you and I just talked about Europe. We are drawing down our force in Europe, and we're drawing down our infrastructure accordingly. We've been asked through the budget reductions to draw down our force in the United States by about 80,000 soldiers, from a high of 570,000 in 2010 to 490 in 2017. So at 490,000 soldiers or 80,000 less, we're going to have holes. And some of those may be very good buildings, great buildings that we could consolidate other bases into, just like we're doing in Europe. Yet I can't do that. I cannot close a base in the United States without authorization from Congress. And so we're going to end up having to operate buildings with no one in it. And there's a cost to operating those buildings. And that cost is money that otherwise would be spent on training our soldiers and ensuring that we're ready to fight the next fight. And what concerns me about readiness, and there's a cost to training. So curtailing training means our soldiers will be fit and they'll know how to fight a gun or shoot a gun. They won't know how to fight a war because they won't have that training as to how you fight a war in group. So when we talk about squad level training, that's a very small unit. It's not company level where you're working together. And there's a great analogy. It's sort of like a football team. And I'm not a big football player, but I know there's like running backs, and there's guys who throw the ball, and there's guys who kick the ball, and there's other roles, showing my ignorance on football. But what if they never practiced together? Everyone practiced their specialty independent, and then they're thrown into a football game, and they've never practiced together. That's like what the Army's going to see in our readiness. We're going to have wonderfully trained snipers. We're going to have wonderfully trained guys who can run the tanks and other people who can target well, but they'll never have practice together in a company base or a larger battalion base fighting scenario to fight a war.
Two things about your analogy there are correct. One of them is, you're right, teams that don't practice together don't play well together, and the other is you don't know a lot about football.
Yeah,
but that's fine, and you don't need to because you work for the Army and not a football team, so that's terrific. You have said recently there's a 15-year backlog of buildings in failing condition. What's the implication there, and other than getting rid of them, you know, what situation are you finding yourself in because you're running this backlog?
Well, sometimes those buildings take up land that could be put to another purpose. Whether it's training ground or whether it's new construction or whether it's a park or housing, but I've got this old building on it waiting for demolition dollars. Our demolition budget was reduced in favor of the warfighter because we want to make sure that that next deployer and the guy who's already over there in Afghanistan is fully supported. So we are directing our funds appropriately to support the warfighter, and our money for our demolition budget was reduced. And I think that's actually okay. But it means we have an increasing backlog of failing buildings. And failing buildings are just one category of buildings. We have buildings that are in good condition, but they might be in a location that doesn't need it. Like a warehouse in a location that used to need a lot of warehousing, but no longer does. It's a great warehouse that we don't need anymore. So we'd love to have someone else come in and use it, but sitting in the middle of an Army base, there's not many people who want to come in and use that warehouse. The third category is a result of stationing. And so by the end of this month, the Army is going to be announcing where we're taking those 80,000 soldiers out of the Army. And that new stationing plan and where those holes are going to be created is going to create excess infrastructure. So if we are reducing by 8 or more brigade combat teams, each brigade combat team consumes about 1 million square feet. So if we reduce by 8 or more brigade combat teams, that means I'm going to have 8 million or more square feet of great buildings that are occupied now and utilized well now, but they're going to be empty holes. I have a choice. I can abandon them in place, which means in a couple of years they'll be of no use to anyone and will be in failing condition, or I can continue to minimally maintain them at a cost so that if I close the base, they're of use to the community or industry or other people who could move in and use that building. And so there's a cost for me to minimally maintain excess infrastructure.
I want to throw a scenario at you about some of these things when we come back and see if there's some potential in it. When we continue in a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com, Catherine Hammack is my guest. She's the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. We'll continue our conversation in just a minute.
For a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserve. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington. Great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Google scans every single picture that you upload to Google+. What it does, it learns what your family members look like. It groups photos of your family members together. It can tell if your subjects are smiling. So if you've got a subject smiling in three photos, and one photo they've got their eyes closed and are frowning, it will take the face from a good photo and paste it into the bad photo so everybody's smiling.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
The Information Management Minute, provided by Iron Mountain.
Federal agencies are grappling with tighter budgets and exponential information growth. The Presidential Directive on Records Management asks agencies to create a government-wide records management framework that is more efficient and cost-effective. Compliance will help agencies transition from paper-based records to electronic records, manage their temporary and permanent records in a compliant manner, and enhance agencies' capability to meet missions and foster open government and the public's access to government records more easily.
Is your agency looking to realize better efficiencies and cost savings through a proven information management program? Iron Mountain stores and protects billions of information assets, including paper records, backup tapes, electronic files, and medical data, helping federal agencies manage their entire information lifecycle. Learn more at ironmountain.com/radio.
Hey, everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
On Sunday, June 23rd, we're going to Baltimore. Well, not really, but they're coming in studio. We have Jonah Kim and Chris Ford from Michael Mina's Pab Boo and Wit and Wisdom. And Fleet Street, also a Baltimore hotspot, is coming in as well.
That's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday at 11 right here on 1500 AM.
Confused memories. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, survey data from 21 states find that about 1 in 8 people age 60 and older report some amount of confusion or memory loss. The study by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention looked at people who reported this happening more or getting worse over the previous 12 months. CDC researcher Angela Diokar says some memory loss can be normal and won't keep people from full and productive lives. She says more serious problems include getting lost in familiar places, trouble handling money or paying bills, repeating questions, and personality changes.
Just because a person shows some of these signs does not mean that they have a serious problem or disease, but it is important to discuss these symptoms with family and healthcare providers.
The study is in the CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Magic 2013, a two-day conference focusing on the critical role of GWACs and MACs, will be held on July 10th to the 12th at the Hilton Alexandria Mark Center. Hear the latest on key issues affecting the acquisition landscape from keynote speakers Congressman Connolly and the former Director of National Intelligence Mike McConnell. Join leaders from NASA SOUP, NITAC, CIO SP3, Alliant, and more as they provide an update on the most popular multiple award vehicles available today. Register today at magicgov.org.
Now for your Federal News Radio cybersecurity update, afternoons at 30 minutes after the hour. Protests in Brazil are extending to the government's websites. The new content includes a call for citizens to take to the streets and footage of protests. You get your cybersecurity update afternoons at 30 minutes after the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Catherine Hammack is my guest, the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. And I promised you a scenario, and the scenario is this. You're not able to close bases, obviously, without congressional authorization. We've talked about that in the ongoing debate over another round of BRAC. But I'm curious about how much autonomy you have and how much creativity you can employ to move around resources around amongst the installations that you have. My scenario is this. You have installation A where you have 5,000 people and you've decided that those 5,000 people can do their work effectively at another location. And you would, under the BRAC that you would like to conduct, close that or consider closing it, but you're not allowed to. So with those 5,000 people gone, could you do a project like those that we've talked about before, where those people leave and you maybe do a partnership with a private company for renewable energy installations, as we've talked about, or any number of other kinds of things? How much flexibility do you have to be able to make some of these things, installations, do totally different things than they're doing now?
There's some interesting rules under which we operate, and one of those is if an installation has more than 300 people or has had more than 300 government employees in the last 5 years, we cannot close it or reduce it below that level without a BRAC. So I have to keep people on it unless I have the authorization to close. But one of the things we are doing is in areas where we have excess infrastructure, we are inviting industry or others to come onto the base to lease some of the space. And quite often that needs to be a compatible use. So on our industrial bases where we might be manufacturing some of the material that's utilized by the Army, a compatible industry might be another metalworking industry that likes the secure environment that a military base provides. Another might be a defense contractor who's working very closely with us on research, development, or a contract who builds an office building in some excess land or occupies a building that is excess to our needs. So we have some opportunity to bring other industries on the base. One of the great examples I saw was in Fort Polk, Louisiana, where they had some excess barracks buildings, and they offered them up to whoever had the best idea. One of those barracks buildings was moved off base. And I always think it's fascinating when you see a building moving down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Must have been quite the sight. But they moved it off base and turned it into a hotel. Another building was moved off base and turned into a homeless shelter. So some of these buildings are in great condition, and we're looking for creativity to help us figure out what to do with them. In the National Defense Authorization Act in 2013, Congress gave us the authority to partner with municipalities, state and local governments for services, with the idea that if a municipality next door to us is already providing waste removal services, they might be able to provide it to the base at a lower cost. Well, we're thinking about what else we could do with that authority. Maybe that municipality needs a place to store snow plows in the summer, and we've got an old motor pool, but we need snow removal in the winter. Maybe we could partner and give them the warehouse space in exchange for snow removal services. So we're looking at creative ways we can utilize that infrastructure, and it can still be maintained because it's in good condition, with the thought that at some future point in time, we would have the authority to put excess property into productive reuse for schools or offices or homes or integrate it back into the community, like has been done successfully around the United States.
We talked in the last part of our conversation about the 15-year backlog of buildings, as you call them, in failing condition. What's your inventory like for buildings, as you just mentioned, that are in great condition, just don't fit what you need, or maybe have outlived their usefulness but aren't fallen down and so can't be categorized as failing?
Overall, when we did a overall capacity analysis, we've determined that about 20% of our infrastructure that we currently maintain, which is about 1 billion square feet, is excess to current needs. And so then you winnow down that 20%, and there's a portion that is failing, a portion that's functional, and a portion that's occupied but doesn't need to be. And that third category makes it hard to really do a quantification. Because one thing that an Army soldier or many of us are good at doing is expanding into available space. You can talk about the empty nester syndrome, where I see many couples whose children have moved on and gotten married, and they're still living in the five-bedroom house.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that house is a little excess to their need, and maybe living in a two-bedroom condo would be about the size they need. Yet they've expanded into the five-bedroom house. Well, just imagine an Army base like that. We have expanded into some of this excess space. So when we look at base realignment and closure, some of it is realigning people into the space they really need versus the space they'd want.
Now, some federal agencies are taking a pretty mathematical approach to that and say we have this many people and they should occupy this number of square feet per person. Can you do it that way in the Army, or is the nature of what you do, is the nature of your mission sufficiently different that that's not practical?
That helps us gives us an overall picture, and that's where that 20% excess infrastructure came from. That's sort of at a macro standpoint. What we need to do now is look at it from a micro standpoint. The challenge with looking at it from a micro standpoint is that's considered a pre-BRAC analysis. And so right now there's proposed legislation going through the House of Representatives that precludes us from spending any money on a pre-BRAC analysis. So I can't even do the analysis to give you the information you're looking for.
Interesting. If you were to do that kind of analysis, is that something that would start at the grassroots and go up, or is that something that you would want to lead from the Pentagon and move down?
Well, I take some of the tools we're using in our European infrastructure consolidation, and we have tools that we use to analyze our capacity, that we analyze our infrastructure, and we determine where the best opportunities are for consolidation. So we would adapt tools that we're already using in Europe to help us look at our infrastructure in the United States.
So I guess the good news is that if you're able to conduct that analysis, you'd probably be able to do it in pretty short order because you have the infrastructure and the policies and procedures ready to go.
Absolutely. And if you look at BRAC 2005, the immediate cost savings was a one-time savings of $4 billion. Annually, we're saving $1 billion. So if we hadn't done BRAC 2005, we would have a higher cost, higher need for budget than we do today. So BRAC does save money for us, and that's something that we need right now.
All right. We've talked a lot about the installations part of your job, and I want to talk about some energy and environment stuff when we come back, if we can.
Sounds great.
Catherine Hammack is my guest. She is the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. We'll continue our conversation on Pentagon Solutions in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This week's Experts in Health topic is summer skin care for kids, featuring Dr. Brent Thibodeau, Chief of Pediatrics in Northern Virginia with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group and practices at the Kaiser Permanente Reston Medical Center.
Hi, I'm Dr. Thibodeau. Did you know that a handful of serious sunburns can increase your child's future risk of skin cancer? Here are a few tips to properly care for your child's skin. Apply sunscreen with an SPF, sun protection factor of 30 or higher. Check label for broad spectrum, which means it blocks both UVA and UVB light. Dress your child in protective clothing such as long sleeve shirt, pants, a wide-brimmed hat, and sunglasses. Take extra precautions near water and sand as both reflect the damaging rays of the sun, which can increase your child's risk of sunburn.
Dr. Thibodeau was recently recognized as a top doctor in Washingtonian Magazine. To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's Experts in Health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Hamid Jafari eradicated polio in India. John McKinnon rescued 160 victims of child pornography. And Kevin Geis saved the Air Force $1 billion in energy costs. The list of federal employees making a real difference goes on and on. 31 individuals and teams of feds are being recognized for their work. Each has been named a Service to America Medal finalist. Hear interviews with each of the nominees and learn more about what makes them tick at federalnewsradio.com. Search Service to America.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
John Mahoney is supervisor of the National Security Practice at the law firm Tully Grinke.
Neither the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act nor this Presidential Policy Directive 19 cover contractor employees. There's a vast number of contractor company employees and have access to national security secrets. They really don't have a clear path right now as to how they're supposed to go about blowing the whistle if, in fact, they believe they have witnessed waste, fraud, and abuse.
Hear the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/Federal Drive. Now your Federal News Radio DOD report brought to you by BAE Systems, afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour. The Navy has signed the latest in what it promises to be a string of department-wide software deals. The Navy awarded DLT Solutions a five-year blanket purchase agreement for Oracle database and related products. It's worth up to $227 million. The fixed-price buy consolidates all of the Navy and Marine Corps' purchases of Oracle products under a single enterprise license agreement. The BPA covers Oracle Database Enterprise Edition and WebLogic Suite. Navy officials say they plan to award 15 more contracts. It obtained a similar deal with a Microsoft reseller a year ago. You get your DOD report brought to you by BAE Systems, afternoons at 40 minutes past the hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My guest on Pentagon Solutions today, the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment, Catherine Hammack. And I mentioned, as we went to the break a moment ago, we've talked about installations a lot. Last time you were here, as I mentioned earlier in the program, we talked about some public-private partnerships that you were engaging in the western part of the United States to address some renewable energy issues and generate energy for bases out there. Talk about what's been going on since the last time we spoke about that and where you see the Army going when it comes to renewable energy.
Well, in the Army, renewable energy is really about our installation resiliency. We talk a lot about building resiliency in our soldiers, but our installations need to be resilient. So you can take a look at Superstorm Sandy that went up the East Coast and took out a lot of the power systems. Our installations then are working on generation, which is usually diesel fueled, but we all heard about New York City having problems getting diesel fuel. So alternative energy systems are an alternative to diesel and other petroleum fuels and give us that kind of resiliency that we need. Renewable energy systems are a priority for us for that reason, mission effectiveness and resiliency. Right now, we have renewable energy proposals out to bid for 132 megawatts of energy. Our goal, which we committed to the president, is 1 gigawatt of renewable energy by 2025. And that's about enough energy to power 250,000 homes. We're looking for that energy to be produced on our installations so that those installations can operate if the grid goes down. Now, there's a benefit to the community because I don't see our population shrinking, and we're all using a lot of energy. So if the military puts more renewable energy on our installations, that's less stress and strain on the power grid and more energy that's available to the community. So new power plants don't have to be built in your backyard or your neighborhood. So we feel that this is a win-win for both our nation and the communities in which we operate.
Is it getting easier to demonstrate the ROI on these kinds of projects?
It's absolutely fascinating how the costs have come down for renewable energy systems. So I talked about those projects that we have out to bid. We're seeing many of these bids come in at parity with or less than our current costs for grid power. So that tells us that the costs for these renewable energy systems are coming down. And really the way we're doing it is just what you mentioned. It's public-private partnerships where the developer comes in and on their own dime, they build the renewable energy system, and we commit to buy power from them for the next 20, 25 years or so.
Mm-hmm. Now, do the cost structures work that as their – well – I was headed a different direction. What I want to ask you then is, as you engage in these public-private partnerships and you continue to see them, the costs trend down, does that make your job easier then to go to Congress and ask for the money to get to, because you're doing the some of these costs up front and then enjoying the benefits for a period of time, right?
Not really. We're asking the private sector to build these systems.
They're bearing all of those costs.
They're bearing the costs. Now, granted, it does take some cost on our part to identify the project, to develop the request for proposal for the lawyers and for our acquisition personnel. So there is some cost to us. But the biggest cost is in designing, developing, installing, and operating those systems. And that's where the private sector comes in.
Are you locked in on the rates that you pay throughout the lives of those deals?
And that can be an advantage. Yes, we are negotiating those rates, and there's much more predictability then because we've seen utility costs only go up. We're really not seeing those come down at all. And in many cases, we're seeing 5, 7, 10, 14% rate increases. That's much higher than the cost of living. So a renewable energy system where the cost of fuel, wind, solar, or others, is not going up, and you have the amortized cost of the capital that was invested, your only variable cost really is the operator cost or the salaries of those people on the ground who are operating the system to ensure the power is delivered.
I've talked to the Navy on a number of occasions about renewable liquid fuels that they're using in a variety of different pieces of their inventory. What are you doing on the Army side when it comes to that?
The other services are the largest users of illiquid fuels, whether you're talking about them for your watercraft or your aircraft. And so the Army is the smallest user of liquid fuels. So we're really letting the other services lead. They are identifying those alternatives, and then we're testing them in our equipment. We're testing them in tanks, generators, rotary aircraft, to ensure that when there is a new fuel available at a price that we can afford, that we're ready to step up and use those fuels.
Do we expect to see a continuation of the cost curve bend on renewable and alternative energy? I mean, you mentioned, and I've seen in other sources, that the costs are coming down considerably compared to a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Is that reasonable to expect that to continue, or are we getting to a plateau where we might see, well, okay, this is where it's going to stick for a while?
I think we're seeing costs come down for everything. I mean, technology is an enabler. Whether you're talking about the cell phones that we carry or the tablet devices, I think technology is reducing the capital costs in every area. And so I fully expect the cost of liquid fuels to be reduced and the cost of alternative energy to be reduced.
Catherine Hammack is my guest. She's the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. And we'll wrap up in just a moment on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Giving you the edge on healthy living. Here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. To Teresa Brown, there's nothing like a family game of backyard baseball.
Nice hit.
Teresa has type 1 diabetes. She has to be careful when the sun soars.
If we know we're going to be doing something that's going to be fairly active, then I need to plan ahead.
Diabetes patients in particular are susceptible to the heat. Not only do they have to worry about their health, they also have to worry about the impact of hot weather on their equipment, their medications, and their supplies.
Mayo Clinic Dr. Curtis Cook says dehydration can happen to diabetic patients quickly in hot weather, so Teresa stays hydrated and checks her blood sugar before and after playing in the sun. Teresa is on an insulin pump that constantly delivers medication. It's essential that she keep her medication and equipment cool. Heat can damage the technology, even the test strips, and it can make insulin less effective. So she's vigilant and takes care to stay healthy in the heat. For more information, talk with your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Tracy McCray.
Since we don't directly pay the bills, most of us don't give much thought to energy consumption in our offices. But soon you might have a daily conversation about it with the building itself. Too cold in your shared office space? Birch and Bajarek Gerber, a University of Southern California engineering professor, is testing a system that allows you to suggest adjustments through your smartphone and combines it with other people's preferences to
try to optimize the set points or communicate with the users where a change could save energy.
And that's key. It's not all about comfort, but also
creating this bi-directional communication so energy awareness could be created within the population of a building.
In addition to temperature, the app also monitors lighting and air quality. To find out more about this story, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Mom, I had the best dream.
Well, good morning to you, too.
Okay, so I was a knight. I had a sword, and our house was a castle. There was this angry dragon. It was kind of scary.
Oh, yeah?
But I protected the castle.
Oh, that's my brave little man. I'm glad our castle is safe.
Your home is your castle, and sometimes you need help defending it. The National Association of Realtors supports maintaining homeowner tax incentives because they make home ownership more affordable for more families. Learn more at houselogic.com.
Paid for by the National Association of Realtors.
Kick off summer at the Safeway Barbecue Battle June 22nd and 23rd to benefit the Boys and Girls Clubs. 30 bands on three stages, including the Wailers and Roy Ayers on the Pepsi Next Lay soundstage, and Kristen and the Noise and EU on the famous Dave's music stage. Free food in Safeway's sampling pavilion, the National Pork Barbecue Championship, Ranchers Reserve Beef Contest, Purdue Sizzlin' Chicken Contest, plus NBA Nation, and lots more. Easy to get to by metro. Visit bbqdc.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. The Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment, Catherine Hammock's my guest on Pentagon Solutions today. And one of the things that we've talked about in just about every part of the discussion that we've had today, ma'am, is the budget situation that the Pentagon finds itself in, as well as the rest of the federal government. I've talked on a number of occasions on this program about the fact that of the three budget frameworks that exist right now, the president's plan, the House Republican plan, Senate Democratic plan, you're looking at sequestration in 2014 under any of those plans. Now, it's not likely that any of them will ever become law, and that what does become law will be dramatically different from each of them individually. But I wonder what that uncertainty means for you as you're trying to do a lot of these things that we've talked about throughout the course of the hour, and as you're trying to maintain readiness, which we also touched on earlier.
It makes it very difficult to budget and plan. One of the challenges we've also been facing are the continuing resolutions, which means we can't actually operate within a budgetary environment or even a more restricted environment. And when you can't plan, you can't do things like plan for training, because you might plan for training and then not be able to execute it. And the resources that went into that planning are unable to execute, and whereas those resources could be used for something else. And so this uncertain budget environment handicaps us in more ways than one. It handicaps our energy programs that focus on efficiency. It handicaps our partnerships with the private sector. It handicaps our ability to contract, and that we're contracting for shorter terms because we don't know about the budgetary environment, and that doesn't help those defense contractors who've been working with us throughout the years.
Always look forward to having you here, and we manage to get together about once a quarter or so, and I appreciate that. When we get together in the fall, what do you think will be on your plate? What do you see on the horizon for yourself and the team that you lead in the next couple of months, ma'am?
I think one of the biggest discussions are going to be force reductions, because, as I said, we're going to be announcing shortly the locations that are going to be losing forces. And as those locations lose forces, we're going to have holes in our infrastructure. And I'm going to need to modify that infrastructure.
And as you do that, and you'll no doubt be on the Hill, and you'll no doubt be involved in discussions all over the place, and I'll look forward to continuing that discussion with you as well. Thank you very much for
Absolutely.
Being here today.
Thank you, Francis. It's always good to see you.
Thank you very much. Catherine Hammock is the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment, my guest on Pentagon Solutions today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My conversation with Secretary Hammock archived later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth in the second hour of In Depth with Francis Rose, coming next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.